Today is Wednesday. It's August 4th, 2021. It's 1:38 in the afternoon. And hi, this is John Williams. Thanks for finding the Mincing Rascals podcast. Share it with your friends. And listen.
Interrupting John. Sorry.
And listen for me weekdays on WGN from 9 to noon, John Hanson.
They already know that. I'm John Hanson. You can hear me on WGN Radio and with Block Club Chicago.
I'm Lisa Donovan. I'm a writer and editor at the Chicago Tribune.
Brandon Pope, CW26 Chicago on Ebony Magazine.
I'm Eric Zorn, the thoroughly vindicated Mincing Rascal.
What do you feel validated about now, Eric?
I feel validated about what's happened with the Cubs. You know, I defected from the Cubs a couple of years ago, and now the team is just a bunch of prospects and has-beens. And I also feel pretty vindicated about my insistence that people wear masks and get vaccinated, and that we need to really take the stick to those people and force them to behave in a responsible way. And it looks like many public officials are coming around.
The smug Eric Zorn and company are all here.
Smug would have been a shorthand for that, yes. I'll own that.
Incidentally, you know, I just referred to this in passing in our last podcast, but I'll just make it a little more official, although we don't have the exact details. But the Mincing Rascals podcast, we used to record in studio. Now we record via Zoom. We've been wanting to do it in front of a live audience for a long time. And so Saturday, October 30th at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, we are going to record the podcast on stage in advance of our Thomas Jefferson conversation that I'll be having right afterwards at the Tivoli Theater. So we always do a conversation on WGN Radio with Thomas Jefferson or Teddy Roosevelt. I host the president on stage and people ask questions. It's weird and it works. So in front of that, we're going to steal 30 minutes. If you come early to the show, you'll be able to watch, listen. Well, I you don't normally get to do that. You'll get to watch and you'll get to watch and I don't think we're going to let them ask questions, are we? Right?
They can heckle, though. That'll be it.
The Jefferson Show, you get to watch, listen, and ask questions. Half of the conversation, I talk to TJ, and then half of the show, people ask questions, like, what's up with the slaves? So that's the Jefferson Show, but you'll at least be able to sort of cheer us on as we record the Mincing Rascals podcast. So,
can you sort this out by October 30th, John? I just don't know what I'm supposed to do.
So I don't have ticket information for you yet, but you will have to pay to go see this because you'll be actually going to the Jefferson Show, but you'll be coming in a little early if you come for the Mincing Rascals. And it's October 30th, and we'll give you details on future episodes of this podcast or at WGNradio.com.
Hey, John, is it October 30th or September 30th?
Yeah, it's the day before Halloween.
Oh, yeah, I'm here then, yeah.
Can this whole podcast just be about figuring out the future podcasts?
Yeah. That's all I've got time for today.
Who's on first?
Nice, what topics are we talking about next week, guys?
I think a year.
Talking about last week's show.
I think a year from now we'll still be talking about this stupid coronavirus. At least we're in phase five, right? But interesting things have happened since we last met. One day last weekend, for instance, 800,000 Americans got vaccinated. Saturday, last weekend, 800,000. Lots of kids got vaccinated for Lollapalooza. You know, we asked our listeners, why are you finally choosing to get vaccinated? We got an interesting set of responses. The city is still not mandating proof of vaccination to go into restaurants. John, do you see that coming? We had Dr. Allison Arwoody on today, and she said there's still no plan for the city to do that, but I don't think she was being entirely honest.
Well, I don't think anyone in New York saw it coming until it came. And I feel like this is a moving target all the time. I think a lot of restaurants and bars, and I know, Brandon, you've been tweeting about this too, are doing it on their own. I mean, you see breweries starting to do it on their own.
Yeah,
that's my preferred method. I'd rather just businesses figure it out for themselves. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if in a month this changes. We're at over 200 cases a day in the city. That was always kind of the line in the sand for the city to start changing some of the rules and regulations. If we get above that, we're there now. I don't know where we're going. I mean, a couple of the other countries that had this Delta variant rush through, they saw a big spike. Everyone freaked out, and then they've seen easing off. The UK has eased off a lot. Maybe we'll follow that same path, but fast forward a month, I would say 50-50 chance that they require vaccines to get in.
Yeah. The libertarian in me has the idea that maybe what you should do is, instead of requiring these masks and so on and vaccines, you should just make a sign out front. If your business does not adhere to those standards, that you have to have a sign, a large sign either way, and give customers the choice. So if you go to a restaurant, it says you can wear a mask or not in here. It doesn't matter if you're vaccinated. Our employees may or may not be vaccinated. You can say, well, I'm going to move on. And then you go to a restaurant where it says customers must be vaccinated, and you feel more comfortable there.
And it's relying on the honesty of people, though, too.
Well, yeah. The other system probably does also, right? Because it's fairly easy to get bogus credentials, which is why Allison Arbery's claim that 90% of the concert goers at Lollapalooza over the weekend were vaccinated because they had credentials saying they were. I'm not buying that. I've seen ads online and references online to getting these. And you can just it's not a complicated form. It's not one that would be difficult to counterfeit. So I'm very skeptical of that.
They could even show someone else's. I know people that did that.
You don't have to check. There was no ID check. You presented a Lollapalooza, right, Brandon? This is what happened. You gave them a vax card, but they didn't check your ID, and there's no picture on the vaccine card. Right. So how do they know that's you?
All you had to do was hold up the card or hold up the picture on your phone of the card, and there was no looking in to see who if it's really you or not. It's just a scout's honor type of thing. There's a piece of paper in your hand, so hey.
Dr. Arbery said, yeah, we know, and we knew that that's the way it was going to be. She said that when they said, and as they continue to say, 90% of the people were vaccinated, they expected that people would be cheating that way. But by and large, they also expect most people don't. And that's true. Most people do follow rules. Most people are honest. Most people are vaccinated. So they stand by their 90% number. She today still feels that that's an accurate report.
I am one of the few people that don't think that Lollapalooza should have been canceled. I think that it was fine to go through with it. They had a benchmark number that the city had where if they got above that number, they'd revisit it. They didn't get there. If we are going to have metrics for reopening and metrics for things like that, you kind of got to stick with them. And I think I talked about this a month ago. I still feel the same way, even with this spike in Delta variant. You are in control of what you do to yourself, right? Like, you got the vaccine. You can wear a mask. You cannot wear a mask. Last year, I felt the opposite. Now I feel like you do what you do. You know your options right now. And if you don't follow them and you get sick, then that's on you. And I know that there's breakthrough cases, and I know that there's breakthrough hospitalizations that kind of ding at my argument a bunch. But I just feel like, hey, you know the options in front of you. Do it or don't.
That's exactly what her argument has been. I don't know if you all tune into her almost daily press conferences on Facebook Live, but Dr. Arbery has been saying, the city's public health commissioner, she's basically said some version for weeks now that this is something we're going to have to live with, meaning COVID-19. Mm-hmm. It's variants which are going to continue to rear their head until, you know, we get this sort of herd immunity, which now folks are saying needs to be scientists are saying need to be right around the 80 to 90% mark. She has said that she was asked multiple ways, aren't you going to pull the plug on Lollapalooza? Would you recommend that I go? I'm really nervous about it. She artfully sort of scooted around that kind of advice. The first time I heard her say, she was very direct. You know, we are going to have to live with this in society, and we're going to have to learn how to live with it.
And she did go to Lollapalooza, and the governor didn't, by the way. The governor, out of an abundance of caution, decided not to go, and then said, but that's not doublespeak. That's not a contradiction. I'm saying it's safe, but I'm saying I don't think it's safe enough to go.
It really shows you the disconnect, I think, between City Hall and the governor's mansion. I mean, I just feel like the mayor and the governor they're not communicating.
Well, the governor doesn't look like the healthiest person, so that does get to be a personal decision. I thought it was very interesting, Lisa. You've been more dialed in on Allison Arbery's messaging about this than I have been, although I'm like everybody else. I'm listening to her when I hear her. But she said today that when we say it's okay to go to Lollapalooza, we're not saying it's safe for you as any individual. We're saying that the hospitals can handle the consequences of Lollapalooza. It's the city's public health system that is safe. that's different because I said, when you and the mayor say it's okay to go to Lollapalooza, we think what you're saying is, hey, John, it's okay to go to Lollapalooza. And they're not. They're saying, hey, John, we've got room for you at Northwestern. That's a different message. But that's truly what they mean when they say it's okay.
But how you deliver that message matters. And that hasn't been made clear at all.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Right. It wasn't in the mayor's rollout video that she made.
No, they were sitting in lounge chairs with sunglasses, yes, looking all hip, but they should have been at Northwestern going, we got plenty of room.
In fairness to them, they made that video back, what was it, in June, when things looked a lot different than they look now.
Right.
So I will push back a little bit on John Hansen's
bring it.
Claim that it doesn't really matter if you don't want to get vaccinated, you get COVID, that's on you. Go ahead and get sick and die if you want to.
I didn't quite say that for the record. Rewind, listeners, if you want.
I think it's pretty much a direct quote. The thing is that puts such a strain on our healthcare workers. It puts a strain on our hospitals. If you've got too many people with hospitalization rates are high for this new variant, and you've got ERs that are full, intensive care units that are full, then you're going to have people who did get vaccinated, who had a heart attack, or who need some emergency surgery, who can't get it. I don't think we're at a point where we can say, well, this is kind of like the flu. People are going to get the flu. That's probably always going to be true. I think we're at a point now where it is the responsible thing to do, not just for yourself, but for the community at large, for your neighbors, for your community, for your coworkers, for the people you run into on the street. It's a responsible thing to get that vaccine. And I know you're not saying don't get it.
Right. No. And I think you're bringing up great points, especially about hospitalizations. And I think that what I'm saying is, you're right. I just can't talk about it anymore. I cannot convince anyone else to get it anymore. Right? I think it's all there. It's all there. We've all tried. We're going to get it. I don't know what to do anymore. And I don't want to waste my brain space on it.
I also think it's perplexing, too, to hold these events. When you have people flying in from all over the country and you don't know sort of what that looks like, what their community spread is, and knowing that obviously that is not going to stay in the confines of Grant Park, you know, the taxpayer-funded park where they have Lollapalooza and close it off to us taxpayers. That's another story. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. And at some point then it sort of shadows everything. You start to sort of not be able to put your faith in, you know, our leaders when they're saying, okay, well, we're relying on science. Well, when it suits you, but now you're looking at the ledger and saying, hey.
Which she didn't say. I wish she would have owned that. And I mean, I don't think that's a sin to say we can't afford not to take the managed risk. Actually, she got very close to that, but that's the thrust of it. It's not 100%. So yeah, it's a risk. It's a managed risk. We need to open the city up. I am 100% okay with that message if they just be upfront about it.
That's been her mentality since the start of the pandemic, is not doing too much. She's been to the right of Pritzker and state lawmakers when it comes to pretty much everything dealing with COVID. And Lala's a big money maker. At this point, I can imagine trying to cancel Lala last minute would cost a lot of money and a lot of headache. So at that point, they're probably too deep in to even cancel it. But it is interesting, the optics, when you have, you know, a major festival, the Hyde Park Summerfest, just announced today. Yeah. They are canceling their event in Woodlawn. And I can tell you, that was going to be a very packed event. Like, imagine the entire south side of Chicago just coming out to one event after missing their festivals for so long. But the organizer said, for the community's health and safety, I think it's smart to pull out of this. I imagine that cost them quite a bit of money in terms of what they were planning, but they made what they thought was a smart decision. And the optics there are, okay, this is a Black-run festival with primarily Black people. We know that COVID has impacted Black and brown people the heaviest. So they made the smart decision. We're not going to do that to our community. And then Lollapalooza happening, the optics there, you have mostly white people, white crowd, spreading potentially this Delta variant to people and harming people in the city that don't even contribute to the festival.
But the Black and brown community is not as a percentage as vaccinated as probably the families those kids were from that went to Lala, right? What's your point? They should have canceled Lala if they're not going to have gospel or jazz or blues fests, and they're not.
To pull a festival off like this in spite of all of the rising numbers and cases, it just wasn't a good look. And everyone knew that. Like, nationally, locally, all the jokes on social media, all the jokes thrown online was just like, wow, Chicago's wilding.
And a lot of your CTA operators, a lot of the people that run the businesses that work downtown, a lot of them are from lower socioeconomic situations anyways, working minimum wage jobs. And those are the people that they're interacting with. But I just don't know what – if the metric is 200 cases a day or whatever the case is and we're still below it, you've got to honor those numbers that you set as the carrot and the stick. I mean, if X amount of people got vaccinated, we opened up this amount. You know, it's like you've got to honor it both directions. Otherwise, no one's going to take anything seriously. And then we weren't at that number when the festival started. Sure, we were on our way to get there, but – I think that you have to kind of stay firm with the goals and the metrics you set from the get-go.
I think it's really interesting what's going on with Governor Pritzker, who on Wednesday announced that he is going to be requiring, the state's going to be requiring all school students, public and private, K-12, to wear masks. I think even if they're vaccinated, that must be correct. They couldn't possibly have an exception for that. Right. And this is to avoid. I've seen on the TV newscast lately these raucous meetings, these PTA meetings or school board meetings where parents there are parents on both sides who are just vehement to the point of wanting to come to blows over whether it's okay to put these masks on kids. And so Governor Pritzker is short circuiting those things by saying, okay, this is going to be a statewide requirement. I think this is just the beginning. As we get into the fall, I think this is just the beginning of this of a crackdown where we're just going to say, you can't. And there are a number of employers, Tyson Foods, Microsoft, other major employers are saying you don't get vaccinated, you can't come to work.
What was the real estate company, Eric, that did that?
The developer.
But they employed like 500-600 people, and they said unless you got a solid religious or medical reason, you're terminated if you do not have proof of vaccination. End of conversation.
An advocate, Aurora, says that 75,000 employees who work for them have to be fully vaccinated by October 15th. You've also got the governor insisting that state employees who work with the public, the prison guards and so on, have to be vaccinated, who have daily direct contact with the public have to be vaccinated, or I presume will lose their jobs. He may get some real pushback from the unions. And there's another irony here nationally is that teachers' unions – who were so concerned last year about all the teachers are so concerned, and I understood why, about going back to school and teaching and during the time of COVID, suddenly they're balking at the idea of forcing teachers to get vaccinated in order to get back into the classroom. Suddenly the teachers union has turned on that, which is dismaying to me. So I think that if you're going to be teaching in a classroom full of kids, especially kids who can't be vaccinated, you got to be vaccinated, period. End of story, end of job.
Eric, to answer your question, I was chatting on WGN with Kathy Griffin, who is the Illinois Teachers Union, or IEA president, who they still oppose the idea that teachers have to be vaccinated. I even pushed and said, shouldn't students and parents know whether the teacher in the classroom is or is not vaccinated? And she doesn't think so, that should not be a thing, which I also find very strange.
I don't have
kids, but if I'm sending my kids and the teachers.
I mean, teachers got to pick a lane here, right?
Yes.
I mean, seriously, they spent the whole year saying we don't want to go into the classroom because we're afraid of getting COVID. And now they won't get vaccinated. I mean, come on, one way or the other. But I can't be with you on both.
Here is the fundamental common thread among people who have not yet gotten vaxxed. They're not stupid. They're not Republicans. They're not minorities. They're not urban or rural. They're stubborn. They're stubborn. They won't do it because you told them to do it. And that's the common thread. And, John, that's why you're beating your head against the wall, because you can't fix that. That's hardwired.
Most unvaccinated people are Republicans or identify as Republicans, or at least when you poll them, Republicans are way more likely not to get the vaccine.
51% of Republicans who identify as Republicans, 51% say they aren't or won't get vaccinated, which is stunning to me. But I don't think being a Republican makes you that way. I think being a Republican makes you stubborn, or being stubborn makes you more likely to be a Republican.
I mean,
think about that. Black and brown people are not most inclined to be Republicans, but yet they are underrepresented in the vaccinated ranks. So what's the common thread there?
It's a mistrust of government. And, in the conversations I've been having, I've been really concerned about how this is the vaccines have become a culture war. It really is becoming that. The unvaccinated versus the vaccinated. Even within the black community, you have vaccinated folk looking down at unvaccinated folk and vice versa. Unvaccinated folk calling the people that are vaccinated sheep and don't know what they're doing. And it's just, it's becoming really toxic. And part of the issue and reason for that is because the government messaging, the CDC messaging, all of this around COVID and the vaccine has not been perfect. It's not been great. And that's created some confusion, some doubt among people who naturally have a mistrust of government.
People always say the messaging hasn't been great, but I don't know what that means. Does that mean that the CDC didn't knock on every person's door and tell them, hey, individually, based on all your health rating, you should do it? Because all the messaging I've heard, I feel like, has been spot on. Now, maybe that's because I'm the person that has my ears open for all the news that I want to hear. But what is wrong with the messaging? They've told you exactly who or who shouldn't and who should get vaccinated. It's a moving situation.
Oh, it's a moving situation. Well, that's it. Remember, originally we were taking off our clothes and throwing them in the washer because we were afraid we were going to get it when we were wiping down our groceries, right?
Science evolves as science figures out new things.
Not arguing that point, but if Brandon's point is that the messaging hasn't been consistent,
it switches up. That's the thing. And yes, I agree with you, John. Science changes. I think those of us who follow the news and understand, you know, this is a process. We get it. And I'm not faulting the CDC necessarily for that. But that does create confusion and mistrust when there's constantly a moving of goalposts and I know we said this, but now upon further, you know, looking into things, we're actually going to say this now. And our new recommendations, things like that.
But to John's point, I think people that are stubborn will look for any excuse not to do something.
I agree with that. I completely agree with that.
They're like, oh, the goalposts move. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, it's validation.
I think we're also underestimating how many people actually have access to, a lot of this is digitized, that effort. And I also think people underestimate the number of people who are working, you know, 2 and 3 jobs. They're working the second shift and a third shift job. And they're simply, there is no time to go out and do this.
To do what?
Go out and get your vaccine.
Well, that was an issue then. You could walk into a Walgreens right now. Is there a Walgreens near you, Lisa? You could get a vaccine.
There is near me, but there.
You'd be surprised.
There are plenty of neighborhoods that don't have even a healthcare center, much less a pharmacy. I mean, we know about the pharmacy deserts in this city. We all sort of take a look at our lives and think, oh, we're mobile and we're doing this and we're doing that. We don't account for people who may not be able to do that, whether that's sort of living in some kind of isolation, a huge city, or living in isolation in, you know, my home state of Nebraska.
And we got to remember, too, that not everybody can afford to take a day off of work after getting the vaccine.
Yes.
That's also when I hear people often refer to the symptoms and what they hear about what happens after you take the vaccine. I'm a guy, John knows this, I took the vaccine and went through it. Yeah. The second dose, I had to go to the hospital a week later because I was having trouble breathing with my asthma. So, you know, the symptoms are a thing. I'm still here, obviously, but I'm better for it. So, I understand concerns with the symptoms and having that kind of take you out the way it does, because the flu shot does it a little bit to you, but not the way this does. This is different.
Most people that get the vaccine don't suffer consequences like you did.
Of course. Of course. Yes. Yes.
I do want to take one moment to recognize we did pass the 70% threshold of adults about a month after President Biden wanted it. And I feel like sometimes it's all of us arguing about people not getting the vaccine. More and more people are, right? Mm-hmm. And more people are more open to it. The polling at the turn of the year showed a much larger percent of the population saying they would never get it. And then there were a lot of people that were still hesitant. So I think there have been a lot of positive strides. That number of people that absolutely won't get it has gone down considerably. The people that said that they're hesitant to get it has gone down. So I think there has been some successful things that have happened. I mean, when you think about it, I think we put a lot of weight around, I can't believe this many people won't get it. Well, out of adults, it's only 29.9% of the population. It's still a big chunk, but we have made some strides, and maybe that's why I should get off my horse about not wanting to talk about it, because maybe that actually has changed their minds. I looked at the numbers. One of the biggest reasons why still people who they're not totally against the vaccine, but they're in that window, I forget what they call it, the maybe or the haven't yet, is their physician having access to the vaccine. More people would do it if it is their direct doctor that can give it to them. And I know that's been one hiccup in this rollout, is they've had a lot of trouble trying to make sure that these vaccines are in your doctor's office. So maybe that's one area that they're going to continue to identify to get better at.
In red state America, they really ought to start using the term Trump vaccine. Because Trump does at times like to take credit for having come up with it. He inherited it himself. But just call it a Trump vaccine. Lindsey Graham was diagnosed with COVID last week, and he was very open about saying, I feel fine. I know that I would be much worse off if I hadn't had the vaccine, which McConnell has been advocating the vaccine. Even Governor Death Santis down in Florida is also promoting the vaccine, even though he's promoting laws that forbid schools from having mask mandates. So,
and to any Democrats that don't want to call it the Trump vaccine, hey, it's like a vaccine. If you get the Trump vaccine, Trump doesn't come back.
I'll be interested to after the FDA approves it, because I've heard that argument from people. Look, I just want another insurance policy. I've heard it from my own relatives who grilled me about, like, how did you do? How did you feel? Ask my husband the same thing. You know, how did you do? How did you feel afterwards? I hear people get really sick. And I said, I think some people do, but they come through it.
I hear Pfizer is going to be FDA approved, they think, next week, right?
Yeah. I don't know if that's only anecdotally, but I have heard that within my own family.
You think that's going to matter to your family members?
I don't know. I'll be interested to hear.
Well, I mean, it would just seem to me like the anecdotal evidence is profound that it's a good, smart, safe thing to do. If they now said, okay, it's no longer – it's not experimental, mm-hmm. are they going to say, oh, good, now it's safe? What more proof would somebody need?
You know? I don't know. But I've heard it, and
– I've heard it too. I just wonder if they'll think, oh, darn, what's the next excuse I can lack on?
I got to really rack my brain.
Yeah. I actually – the inquisition I underwent was genuine. How did you feel? Why didn't you wait? It was curious and fearful. And I think a lot of it is because of the political battles.
So, Eric, you think that if Donald Trump was on a TV commercial with maybe by himself, maybe with somebody else, but he said, hey, everybody, we're at 70, let's go for 80, take the Trump vaccine, let him have that. You think he would do that? And you think that that would help, huh?
I don't know if he would do it, but I think that it would make a huge difference if that were to happen. I think that you could bring people. The other thing about the FDA approval is I believe it gives institutions like universities and so on much more legal muscle when it comes to requiring. Because there's no question that a school can require a mumps vaccine or a rubella or something like that. This is just standard in the law, and people balked at those things over the years, but they don't anymore. And so, if it is on that same footing as far as the FDA is concerned, I think that you can put more width behind the stick that mm-hmm. you're using to force people to get your vaccine. So that would be another good reason for FDA approval.
Who saw the video this week that went viral of the guy on the crotch rocket riding his motorcycle with a bunch of other people, and he's doing a wheelie, and now he's leaning back on the motorcycle and ready to touch the ground as he zooms along on one wheel, loses control, other motorcycles run over him, eventually his motorcycle bursts into flames, mayhem ensues, people stop their bikes, and now they're all trying to tend to each other. It's insane. John Hansen, did you see that video I'm talking about this week?
Yes. Yes, I did.
That wasn't you, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was something else. You guys have been talking about this, John. I heard it on the radio, and I know you guys, you know, it's every news story. I do not get what the big deal about a plethora of motorcycles going down the street. Like, it's annoying, especially if you have to get off an exit and they're all blocking the lanes and, like, it's a loud noise. What am I missing here?
Yeah, the conversation.
I think it's a big deal, and this is downtown. I think it's a big deal because we haven't seen people descend on downtown in more than a year, and now we have Lollapalooza. You know, when I was young and fun, you'd see these folks out every Friday or Saturday night.
Motorcyclists
coming home late from a concert. Man, it would be packs of of these mostly guys on these crotch rockets just zooming up Lakeshore Drive.
It goes all night. It goes all week.
Yeah. We heard it. We heard it in the middle of the night on the Northwest Side just last night, and it was annoying. It wasn't right on our street. I think it was probably on Irving Park Road, not too far from us. But it, that, and I hadn't heard that in a while. And I think the other argument, John Hansen, would be that it's dangerous for drivers. They say if you're driving down the road and these guys are weaving in and out, and you're not sure where to go, you're trying to get away from it. That I mean, I of course, at the same time, I can't say that I've heard of a lot of car accidents.
It was dangerous before. I mean, why now? That's what I was wondering. Sort of why?
I think the observation is from John's callers and everybody else that it's much more pronounced now than it was. That there are many more of these incidents, much more of this going on. But I don't know if it might just still be anecdotal, right?
I just don't see what the solution is. Like,
there isn't. I was thinking, right. what could you do that would stop it? Obviously, the police can't chase them.
The more we talk about it, the more exciting it is for them to do it.
Well, I know what you do. You pass an ordinance, by golly, and you make. I mean, the city did in April. They passed an ordinance that said there's noise restrictions. You got to have at least one hand on the handlebar. You can't be standing up on the seat while you're riding the motorcycle. These guys do. They're real acrobats. I got to give them credit for that. But none of that fixes it. And I know this all sounds like get off my lawn, right? You kids. Hey, you kids out there, stop making all that noise. But I think it's a new phenomenon, at least in size and scope. Hundreds of them coming up to Stevenson, blocking off exits and entrances. I mean, it's more than an inconvenience. It is a safety thing. And it's so freaking annoying at a time when it's like we've got killer hornets. We got a pandemic. The economy's just trying to get back on its heels. The humidity was terrible the other day. I'll tell you this. My hair was a mess. And then we got to layer this crap on. I mean, God, we can't catch a break in this town.
Well, I understand the safety concerns for sure. And you make a good point there. But if the concern is losing sleep, lack of sleep, move out of Chicago. It's a noisy city. Yeah. Or better yet, weed is legal now. Smoke a joint, take an edible, sleep right through it.
Nah, then we're not doing this topic justice. There's something going on here. Do they zoom up? Are you six nights a week listening to this at 2 a.m, Brandon?
Not 2 a.m, but to be honest, I'm a heavy sleeper, so I sleep through most noises that happen around me.
I live just off Western Avenue, and they zoom by, and it's four minutes out of my night.
I'm in the loop.
I'm easy to fall asleep again. And of course, there are people that have probably suffered from this every single night. And my heart goes out to those people, although it doesn't sound like it when I say that.
It sure doesn't there, John. Boy, I'd hate to see you indifferent to somebody's concerns. But just talk about this for a second. And by the way, the concerns of 60 and 70 and 80 and 90-year-olds are as valid as those of 20 and 40-year-olds that are heavy sleepers. When you have several hundred of them coming up to Stevenson, doing this as they're going, what can the state police do about that? We asked them, and they said, we're well aware of it, and we're writing tickets when we observe it. Nothing.
Yeah, right.
Chicago.
But they're not giving them to anybody because they can't catch them.
And the Chicago.
Them quickly.
The police in the city have a no pursuit policy right now, so they're not going to go after them. They literally aren't going to do anything about it.
They couldn't catch them if they wanted. I mean, I was thinking, could they throw up a roadblock and try to catch them in some sort of a net? No, they would just go around. They'd turn around. I mean, you're not going to catch them. So I guess the answer is that we're going to have to learn to live with
it. Well, the answer sort of doing, they give us tickets for other moving violations based on video. Yeah. Can't they just do this with these folks and just sort of, here, send it, you know, put it in the mail.
But you would need 200 state troopers behind a bush on motorcycles.
Yeah.
Eric, I'm telling you, they obscure their license plates. So you're not going to get them with a camera. I've got friends that live in the West Loop or in the South Loop. It's just a new factor of life that wasn't there when they moved in.
I just wonder if this is something that will peter out, right? It is exciting right now. The weather's really nice. And they hear people talking about how much it annoys them. Yeah. And so they do it some more. But I think this will not be something we're talking. I mean, I could be wrong. I've been wrong many times before in this episode alone. But I imagine it'll peter out.
I do think it probably has something to do with the level of traffic, too. Or the level of attention you get. Sort of if there are not as many people, you know, kind of zooming through downtown. Hey, these wide streets are great to zoom up and down along. If law enforcement knows where they're cruising through, just their presence alone could probably drive them out.
Governor Blagojevich was seen this week, now with darker hair. I said dark hair, but you guys said it's darker hair. I saw a black and white photo. I didn't see him live on TV. What color is his hair now? It was stark white when he got out of jail. What color is his hair now, Lisa?
I would call it a slate gray.
The product he's using seems to be working, so props. I'm surprised he hasn't done an ad for that.
A lot of volume. It's a little bit like mine. It's a little like gray along the sides, but it is still – it's darker than it was in jail.
Well,
but he's not going full. He's just going to do this in shades.
Yeah.
It'll be like when you pull out like a paint chip and you just gonna slowly just move down it.
He was at the federal court building in Chicago this week fighting for his right to run for office while denying any particular plan to do it. Do you think people would vote for him were he to find an office he could run for? He wants the courts to say that the legislature making it illegal for him to run for office, local or state, is unconstitutional. I don't know if that's going to work. I believe he still can run for president or U.S. Senator or the House. He can't, there's nothing in the Constitution that keeps him from running for federal office, even as a convicted felon. Eric, why don't you go first on this? Does he have any standing, and would anybody vote for him for anything?
Well, I would never presume to say that people won't vote for a scoundrel, because we've those who predicted otherwise in 2016 were proved to be foolish. So people could vote for him. I don't know. There's a certain fraction of the public that likes the cut of that man's jib, and I don't understand it, but they do. But about his legal claim, he's got a claim that says that the impeachment process was unconstitutional, that he wasn't given the proper legal rights to defend himself and the proper legal opportunities. But that doesn't really work, because impeachment is not a legal process. Impeachment is a political process. And the next thing he wants to argue is that the law that says that you can't, in Illinois, you can't run for a state or a city or municipal office if you are a convicted felon is unconstitutional. And that's also a very understanding on very weak grounds, because we have all kinds of requirements. His argument was, well, the people should be able to vote for whoever they want to vote for. Why shouldn't they be able to vote for me? Yeah, I was convicted, but I you should be able to vote for me if you want to. You could make the same argument that you should be able to vote for a 34-year-old for a president of the United States, and you can't. Or you should be able to vote for someone who is an undocumented resident if you want to, and you can't. There are all kinds of requirements for public office, and this just happens to be another one. So every legal expert I've heard interviewed on this says, no, he has absolutely no chance. This is just Rob Blagojevich wanting some more attention, and we're giving it to him. So he's probably happy.
That's exactly it. It was a
Jeff
stunt.
Kramer, the former federal prosecutor, kind of left the door open a little bit, though, said that if he were able to sort of make this claim that, I mean, it is a political process. I think that that's somewhat misleading. It's also a governmental process. They do it under the law of the legislature, right? They impeached him. And what Kramer was saying was that, it's hard to sort of argue the due process thing, because that's more something you see in the courts. But when you start saying, you know, through a governmental process, this person cannot, you know, these sorts of folks cannot run for office, you could make the argument that your rights are being violated. Blagojevich said he got a C in constitutional law, and that he didn't think that it was he probably had much of a chance, but he was going to try. And is he going to run again? Does he want to? Yes. He is doing the same thing he was doing when he was running for office. He is jogging all over the city. He has been jogging. He doesn't live anywhere near me. He lives, you know.
My son saw him the other day.
Yeah.
Running down the street.
Yeah, running in the street, running down Ravenswood. And he was somewhere in uptown, like over, you know, jogging through the streets there, which is, you know.
So is this a slow rollout of his campaign? Is that what you're saying?
In a general, I bet you could piece together, you know, there's a certain Republican base that likes that he's bucked the Democrats and that he supported Trump. Okay. In the Democrats, you might have people that like his policy and thought that he was treated unfairly. Okay. Maybe you can get to 25-30% there. Carly, what primary are you going to win?
I'm not saying he's going to win. I'm just saying he wants to run again. I'm not.
Oh, I'm no. I'm.
Yeah.
And what's he running for? Was he running for governor in your estimation, Lisa?
Don't know.
I mean, he wants to be a chief. He doesn't want to be a legislator, right? He doesn't want to be in the city council. He doesn't want to be in the state legislature. He wants to be the CEO of this.
He can run for Senate and if he wants to, because as we said earlier, the federal law does not bar felons from running for office. I think the point passing along earlier that there might be some wrinkle in the impeachment process that means that saying he can't run for office if he's impeached it doesn't pass constitutional muster. But that was all obviated by his federal conviction. If they had just impeached him, impeached and removed him and said this is the condition of your impeachment and removal, he then might have a legal case to argue against that process and say that conclusion was not. But then once he was convicted in federal court, my reading of the law is that would have kicked in whether he had been impeached and removed or not. So what's he running for? If he wants to run for some local state office that would be meaningful to him, it would have to be governor because he doesn't want to be a state rep again. He doesn't want to be a state senator. He doesn't want to be on a school board or something. He thinks of himself as being far too big time for that.
And yet he does cameo videos. He said that they've been surprisingly profitable. And I hope he at least appreciates the fact that the people that are paying cameo money for him to do a personalized greeting to people he doesn't know is that he is the butt of those jokes, right? It's not like, oh, he's my guy, the same way you might if Anthony Rizzo or some movie star or singer is your favorite and you said, oh, look at that, he wished me happy birthday. When Blago wishes you happy birthday, the joke is on Blago, or the joke is on the person getting the yes. cameo, right? It's not a compliment to him that he's making money off of cameo. I don't know that he knows. I don't know that he cares. I guess the check's still cash, so it's all good.
And I think that there are plenty of people who run for office and win, and plenty of people think it's unfathomable that they could run for office and win. So.
He's not winning any races in Illinois.
John, you mentioned someone named Anthony Rizzo when you were riffing there. who is that?
He's a baseball player who plays for the New York Yankees and who said that while he loves Chicago and this is his home, this is his baseball home, $70 million for 5 years to play at Wrigley Field is insulting when he should be getting $120 million. So I got on my high horsey this week, and I said, he should just say that I don't like Chicago that much, because $70 million is generations of money, and if you get to play at Wrigley Field, that should be enough. I know you're paying a $50 million penalty for your affection for the city, but you can't spend $70 million anyway. So I went on that rant, and Brandon and John, I got beat up on that today.
Deservedly so,
really?
He deserves to make what he should make. And $70 million over 5 years for Anthony Rizzo at Wrigley Field is too little, especially when the argument is it's the Ricketts' money. They've got billions. So it's not like he's taking it from us. Like, I guess you could have an argument if he was taking the money from us.
Yeah.
Right? But he's not. It's not like he's stealing from the poor to make more money. I'm so glad people on Twitter and a lot of people on radio are not general managers of baseball teams. I think it was great. I think this core team that everyone loves has done nothing for a couple years. They won a division last year only because the season ended after 56 games. They would have lost by 10 games if it had gone any longer. They had a terrible losing streak in 2019 to miss the playoffs. 2018 couldn't score two runs against the Rockies in a wild card game. They weren't good. Why would you spend a bunch of money to re-sign them? Or they offer them some money. Why would you not get rid of them if they're all leaving in 3 months anyway?
And he hasn't even been that good lately. All right, Brandon, what's your thought on all this?
You know, honestly, I'm kind of on John Hanson's side with this. Like, yeah, of course he deserves to make more money. Baseball's this Wild West where there's not really a salary cap. So, honestly, his numbers were good enough. I think you could warrant paying him more money. He's your hometown kind of guy, helped you win a World Series. I say, hey, 120 mil, why not? And I guess the Yankees got him closer to that, I'm assuming, to make him happy over there.
Well, I mean, it didn't cost much, and the Cubs are still paying the rest of this year's contract for Rizzo. Right. Problem is, he's over the age of 31. He has a bad back. That doesn't work so well, usually, for $120 million. The Cubs made a good move.
Yeah, that's what one of my first texters said was, take your COVID-riddled bad back to New York. We don't care. and too bad for Rizzo, because New York's a great restaurant town, but he can't go to restaurants now, so that's on him. I think...
I think
kind of goes back to this discussion of the Ricketts have a ton of money. I want to be here, but you need to pay me.
Right.
You're making a lot of money off of my bad back.
John Williams, you need to open up a PR firm because
my clients would all lose money and popularity.
Yes. Really?
John Williams, your affection for this area is well known. You came.
I think that's what I'm doing. I'm taking it very personally, Eric.
Yes. Right. How much of a raise would you turn down to stay in Chicago? Offered you like another $1 million a year, which is nothing. It's sofa cushion money for Anthony Rizzo. You would not turn that down. You love this area, but come on. I mean, and yes, he can't spend that much money in his lifetime, but he can give it away. He seems like a charitable guy. His children, his children's children, and their children will all be set for life with that kind of money. And this is the way we keep score, for better or worse. You know, John Hanson was saying that we're not paying for it. Well, those of you who go to Cub games and those of you who subscribe to the Marquee Network are in some ways paying for some of these exorbitant salaries. It is absurd how much it costs to go to baseball games, particularly at Wrigley Field. You don't see as many families there anymore because the tickets are so expensive.
Boy, you never see families there. You never see families there anymore.
And it's so expensive because the players are being paid a lot of money, and the reason the players are being paid a lot of money, people are buying those tickets. And no one is forcing anyone to go to those games or support the Cubs. But that's what the economy of it is, and so it's pleasing to me to opt out of the Cubs economy.
Oh, I still, Zoran, I'll never understand the flipping of sides there. To abandoning the Cubs for the White Sox a couple of years ago, like you did. I don't get it. I still don't get how someone can genuinely do that.
Well, it was the Marquee Network, and it was the Ricketts family. I felt like every dollar I would spend on the Cubs would be going indirectly to the Republican National Committee.
I don't question your motives. I just question your, like, do you really feel like you've left them emotionally?
Yes. It took me 2 years, and it actually took me – finally, this year, with the White Sox being so much better, the White Sox being such a rewarding fan experience, and the Cubs being such an unrewarding fan experience, to make it really feel in my soul that I root for the White Sox.
But I think the more precise question for Eric is, sure, I understand your disenchantment with the Cubs, but do you actually feel a genuine affection for the White Sox like you did for the Cubs?
I'm getting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm getting there. I mean, that's the hard part. That's the hard part.
Not hard. I'm a longtime Sox fan.
Yeah, sure. But the question for you is, suppose the roles were reversed. Could you do that? Could you find it in your heart to like the Cubs the way you have liked the White Sox?
Mm, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I do feel like sort of baseball, I'm sort of tainted because I used to listen to my dad say this all the time, that kind of all this money has ruined professional baseball. So my allegiance is to the Sox, but I mean, I'll go to a Cubs game. I don't mind it.
Right. I'll go to a Sox game, but like I'm sitting there sobbing, calling my dad after game 7, thinking of my dad's mother who went to every Cubs game imaginable, took us as kids in this generational in your blood. Mm. I could never, ever get to that point with the White Sox. And it's not against the Sox. I can get there with any team. Because for me, and I think a lot of people, it's so ingrained in everything.
Yeah.
That even after I'm disappointed about these trades, even though I think they're right, I'll still be there next year. And maybe I'm part of the problem, but I respect all your motives.
You're not part of the problem. I don't know what the problem is, but you, John, don't do that to yourself. You are not the problem.
I argued for years that the problem of the Cubs was people like John Hanson, who loved the team no matter what, and didn't really vote with their feet when the team sucked, and so the team could continue to suck and continue to make money, and nobody really cared that much. And I do give the Ricketts credit for saying, no, that's not good enough. Yeah, we sell a lot of tickets, and the bleachers are full, and John Hanson is there loving us no matter what.
They realized that was not sustainable, that it was a much
much more lucrative prospect to have a really good team. And so I do give them credit for that.
And their politics notwithstanding, Eric, they've invested their money. They begged the city to put private dollars not only in the park and in the team, under the park and in buildings around the park. You've got five restaurants and a hotel next door that is a lot better than the McDonald's parking lot they used to have. Yeah. Here's another sentence I didn't think I'd be saying anytime soon. How about them Bulls?
Out of nowhere, these trades, man, they were active in free agency. Probably more active than any other team in the league, aside from the Lakers. Like, it's rare you see that from the Bulls. So it was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, to just talk about that for a second, Brandon. So they got Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo Ball paired with Zach LaVine is going to be an awesome two-man punch offensively. They picked up DeMar DeRozan, who's a great mid-level scorer, great slasher. And then they had the Vucevic trade this past offseason. They got Alex Caruso, who was a backup for the Lakers, who brings a spark and energy off the bench and is lovable for his balding hairline. So, it's a new look for the Bulls. The roster is completely remade, and it looks like they're at least going to compete to be in the playoffs. They should be in the playoffs this year.
Really, just with these trades they've made this week.
Totally.
Brandon, you didn't mention their draft choice, Io Desinmo, from Illinois. Does he figure into your calculation, or do you think he's just going to warm the bench for them?
Oh, I think he's going to be on the bench for a little bit because Coby White, who was a great young guard they had, is now backup to Lonzo Ball. That starting five is already packed. Coby White, your sixth man. I'm sure Io's going to get in there, though, and what a great moment, this hometown kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was cool. That was very cool. That was very cool.
It was awesome.
He is extremely talented. As a Michigan fan, I was dreaded his ability.
Yeah.
Michigan fan?
Eric, yeah. Oh, that's Eric's. Eric's got deep roots there. Watch it. Be careful with that, Brandon. Michigan, ex-nay on the bad stuff about Michigan's nay.
Well, is Eric going to leave for Ohio State instead? And
Brandon? I don't know. Now you've gone too far.
I'm a Buckeye, Eric. Man, this is tough.
Well, the conversation about which Chicago team is next in line for a championship, and everybody's been mentally stacking them lately, just changed a little bit. The White Sox are first on that list, and the Blackhawks are probably last on that list. The Cubs are down on that list. The Bears and maybe the Bulls are in the middle now. Brandon, do you think I got that right?
I think you did. I think the Bears are probably number two. Depending on how you feel about that quarterback, I think anything can happen in the NFL. They could make the playoffs this year.
With me, so the White Sox are number one, right? We all agree with it's promising. But you're saying that the Bears are more promising than the Bulls right now?
I do think so. I just think the way the landscape is in the NBA right now for the Bulls, especially that side of it with the East and the Nets and stuff.
Oh, that is true.
Well, the fact that the Bulls are even in this part of the conversation is a game changer. I mean, they were number five out of five 2 weeks ago. Hey, let's give Governor Cuomo a couple of minutes here on the podcast before we wrap it up. He is as important as any of these topics, but maybe less so to us in Illinois. And yet there you have the governor of New York saying he's not going to step down. The New York Times, after 179 witnesses and 74,000 pieces of evidence and 11 women who say he acted inappropriately towards them, they've asked for him to step down. Nancy Pelosi has asked for him to step down. Even President Biden, who is no stranger to sometimes odd, tactile displays of affection, asked him to step down. He should step down, right?
I mean, he says he's not going to do it, and I think if he drags it out, it could be a really ugly impeachment process. But it looks to me like the New York legislature is more than willing to get rid of him. There's an election next year, though. I mean, they're in the same point in their gubernatorial election cycle as we are. We've already got candidates on the Republican side out campaigning. The election 2022 season has already started.
I'd say there's no way he doesn't resign, but I said that a couple months ago. One quirk about New York's impeachment process that I was reading about, that even if he, before there's a trial, if I think it's their House, would vote to impeach, even before a whole trial, the governor's actually removed from his powers during that interim period, which is interesting. And then you have to have this whole trial then too in their Senate. I think that plays a role into it, whether he'd really want to lose the governor's mansion and all that pretty quickly. So I think he's going to resign. I think he should. It's a no-brainer.
he should resign. That response was disastrous to me that he had to this investigation. He tried pulling the sympathy card with this situation in his family. He tried to drum that up and use his family as sort of a shield in a sense with that. Then he, you know, at first was all about this investigation and was piping up the credibility of Letitia James. Now he's discrediting the entire investigation. It's almost like he's playing out of the Trump playbook. He has to resign. Once Joe Biden, the president of the United States, says clearly and plainly the chief officer of one of the most important states in the country has to go, you have to go. It's unfathomable that he would even act like he can stay in.
I will not listen to a single Republican on this, however, because there are many, many more credible allegations against Donald Trump in this very area than there are against Cuomo. And I didn't hear any call on from Republicans for Trump to resign. So they should stay out of it. This should be something that the Democratic Party in New York gets together and goes and has a come to Jesus meeting with him to get him to leave. But I could easily see him stalling this out. I wasn't aware of what John Hansen was saying about the process there, if he loses his powers right away. But he is entitled to confront these witnesses. Some of the things that were said about him, some of these things that came out in this report did not seem like on their own that they would be impeachable to utterly disqualifying events. Some of them were horrible or horrifying, I should say, the allegations and were immediately disqualifying.
Well, here's just an example of that, Eric. So as he's walking past a state trooper who's opening a door for him, he runs his hand from below her breast down towards her waist. It was his tactile way, he might argue, of just, you know, as you might pat somebody on the back as you go by, just acknowledging you affectionately. He said, this is the way I've been my whole life. And CNN did a montage today of all the times he's hugging and kissing and touching and coming in physical contact with men, women, children, small animals. He's just all over people. He says, that's the kind of guy I am. And in and of itself, I don't think any one of those instances is an impeachable offense. I think this is where his brain is on that.
Well, one of the allegations I remember is he actually grabbed a woman's breast.
Yeah.
Which is not a little affectionate.
Nope, I'm not putting that in that category. Absolutely.
So it does seem like there are a variety of offenses here that need to be litigated, perhaps, in his mind. And he's certainly entitled to his day in the well of the legislature, wherever these impeachment proceedings happen, if he wants to fight it. But, you know, this is the Trump playbook. It's the Matt Gaetz playbook. You just deny it, you minimize it, and you hope that it blows over. And I don't think there's any way in hell he gets reelected at this rate, but he probably doesn't even run again.
But if he resigns, it's an acknowledgement that you were right, that he was wrong, that he's guilty of maybe even a crime, although what the state came up with was not a criminal charge, which is kind of weird to me, right? What's the point of the entire investigation if then they say, well, it's a civil matter, the ladies can sue him? Why hasn't the state actually put up criminal counts against him?
Well, that could be next. I hear that is in the talks, that was not the way the investigation was designed from the get-go.
I guess.
Fact-finding. But that there is rumors that DA was going to go after this.
In Albany, correct? I believe he went on the air and said, he had a press conference, said we are, in fact, investigating. I understand that there are folks here who think that these are unimpeachable offenses, but I don't think as males you probably are going to be subjected to this kind of stuff. And it's not always so sort of like what they show on TV. A lot of this sort of behavior is nuanced. It's demeaning. If this is an elected official who's behaving that way and he's getting paid by the taxpayers and he's doing that to people who work for him. No, I'm sorry, but this does sort of go down the path of an impeachable offense. He shouldn't be hold office, whatever that means. And I think he could probably, you know, save face by saying this is a distraction, a new wave of COVID.
Yeah.
And it's just time for me to go.
When you look at his reaction and how he's reacted to it, it sounds like someone who's done it for years and years and years and years and has been emboldened by that and that he's never been called out on that. Compared to what Al Franken did, which was not this, how gracious in many ways he was, maybe gracious isn't the right word, honest he was about how bad he felt about how it turns out how he made women feel. I think it seemed genuine awkward, coming from Al Franken. And I think that when you see a Cuomo response, a Trump response, denied a Gates response, it reflects that someone who has never been called out for their crap.
It almost seems like he doesn't even remember the Me Too movement, because this is so 2 years ago. I mean, we've already had this conversation. We know how people feel about it, and we know how stupid his response has been, how tinny it's been.
It almost feels like he's saying, well, shouldn't I be grandfathered in?
Right.
Grandfathered in all this? I'm 62. I'm not saying that's old. It's just sort of...
Thank you for not saying it's old, by the way.
Well, it's not. I mean, But that's sort of I've been doing this my whole life.
So yeah.
Sort of saying I've been on this planet for decades and I've always done this. There was some kind of...
It's hard for me to change.
I don't know what I was listening to, but somebody was like, I am ticked off as an Italian American that he is insinuating that this is the way Italians are. You know, my brothers are Italian and they never would behave this way toward women because they learned from a tough Italian woman how to treat.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, but and in the Times editorial, by the way, Lisa, they also said that sort of forgets the fact that a lot of the charges are things he did in private. He wasn't doing those in public.
Good
Some
point.
Of those things were not on public display. And it's one of the reasons these things often go unreported. It's your word against the all-powerful governor.
And he created a culture, allegedly, where he was, you know, punishing people and making people fearful and, you know, revenge for even bringing this stuff up or having any complaints about it. So it definitely needs to be looked into. It's just wild this guy was looked at as a presidential contender in 2024. And, so much for that, right?
Well,
articles trying to replace him in 2020.
Yeah, that too. I remember that.
There were people who thought that Biden should step aside for Cuomo because on in the pandemic, he was a hero, right? Everyone was thinking he was handling this really well, and he was getting out there and having these press conferences every day with his flight jacket on and really seemed to be in control. And Biden was hiding in his basement, and people were saying, this is the kind of guy we need. And
yeah, that's right.
That would have been a disaster.
Story about him being sort of like women swooning over him, you know, coming on every day and speaking the Queen's, as in the borough, the Queen's English guy. And
right. They call him the Cuomo sexuals, right?
Yeah. Oh my God.
That's exactly what they call him.
Yeah. Wow. Well, just as we wrap this podcast up, it's funny too, because Blagojevich was kind of a long shot darling, but some people thought he was positioning himself for higher office still. And by the way, last thing, guys, what's the Olympic event or moment that you have enjoyed the most?
I'm not going to remember any of the names on this, but there was a women's 800 meter semifinal run where one of the women who was one of the favorites was running in the back of the pack and she tripped and fell and was on the track totally behind everybody else. And she gets up and she just like turns on the jets and she passes everybody to win the race. And the guts and the speed and the talent it took to do that was stunning. I watched that video several times over. So that's just one of the moments that comes to mind.
How about you, John Hansen?
I was on a boat in central Wisconsin drinking whiskey for 10 days. So I have not seen much of anything. I'm sorry.
That is an excellent Olympic moment.
Yes, I agree.
I would win the Olympics if that were it. How long you can sit in an inner tube with a beer and knock it off. I am your gold medalist.
A gold medal decision.
Brandon, you got any ones to share?
Yeah, I got three. I'll do them quickly. Simone Biles coming back to win the bronze was powerful. Just to see her resilience through all that. And she just revealed today that her aunt, I think it was her aunt that died during the Olympics. So she had a lot going on. So to see her bounce back, France beating the USA in basketball was huge. And I think it showed that the global sport is bigger than ever. And then the USA winning their first Olympic gold in women's fencing. The woman that did it, she's like, I think, 24. I covered fencing in 2012 for the Olympics when I was in London. And it's a sport that I like to watch. And it was just cool to see them finally get a gold. Because fencing, we tend to lag behind. So
yeah.
Those are my three.
How about that? Lisa, anything for you?
No.
I was watching the diving again today. The synchronized diving. I used to like diving off the diving board when I was a kid. I thought I was pretty good. I could do a 1.5. And to watch the divers and the synchronized divers is very enjoyable for me. Okay, guys, that wraps up this Olympic effort on the Mincing Rascals podcast. Stay tuned for more details, too, by the way, as we try and position ourselves to get on the stage at the Tivoli in Downers Grove on Halloween's Eve. John, Brandon, Eric, Lisa, thank you.
Hello.
Thanks. We'll see you guys soon.
See you, kids.
Nice to see everybody.
Oh, by the way, Eric, I was going to ask you, is that a real backdrop on your Zoom?
No, it's not. I was visiting a friend on Cape Cod this weekend. I really liked his bookcase, so I took a picture. And
I was going to ask you to turn around and tell us what the books are, because I've been squinting at the screen to see what cool books are Eric Zorn has behind him. That's not
well,
your...
let's see him do that. Let's see him try.
He's turning around now, but it's digital. There's no books on her. All right, kids. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Have a good one.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.